listening to WNUR 89.3 FM, HD1, Evanston, Chicago. I'm Jessica Watts, and this is WNUR News at 6. Tonight, D&D's enters the Hall of Fame, the end of Gaydar, a look at GeoGuessr, and the sports report. Those stories and more coming up. From Northwestern University, this is WNUR News at 6. This Tuesday, neighborhood grocery store and restaurant D&D's Dogs and Finer Foods was inducted into the Vienna Beef Hall of Fame, an honor held by only 153 other establishments nationwide. Reporter Mika Ellison has the story.
D&D Dogs and Finer Foods is an establishment of the Evanston community. Placed right next to the Noyes CTA stop, it's in a central location. It serves everyone, from college students trying to stock up on groceries, to families getting a bite to eat, to people passing through and searching for a local staple. And just like every other morning, D&D Dogs is full of people. But unlike every other morning, it's for a very rare occasion.
You know, some folks ask, why do these hot dog places last so long? And it's because of what they contribute to the community and to the quality of what the food they put out and their whole business. And I think that this is no exception. We are very proud to be able to present this award today to the D&D family.
That was Bob Schwartz, the vice president of Vienna Beef Customer Development and the author of Never Put Ketchup on a Hot Dog. He presented the DeVicus family, the proprietors of D&D's, with a plaque that proclaimed them new honorees of the Vienna Beef Hot Dog Hall of Fame.
The Hall of Fame was created to honor longtime operators that have developed into neighborhood landmarks, and out of thousands of Vienna Beef customers over the years, we have recognized only 153 nationwide since the award was created in 2006. So from the entire Vienna Beef family, we are proud to welcome D&D Dogs and Finer Foods as the 154th honoree.
Vienna Beef sales rep Charles Bodman nominated D&D's because out of all the places he visits regularly,
this place really stuck out. They've been around for a long, long time.
D&D's Dogs and Finer Foods was founded by two brothers, Thomas and Peter DeVicus, in 1973. They combined a deli and a grocery store to create a unique one-stop shop for customers. Costa DeVicus is a son of Thomas DeVicus and now runs the stores. He spoke about what this recognition means to him.
It's obviously a great honor, you know, to the Vienna Beef for all of us, the 154th business in the United States. You know, we've been here for a long time. We plan on staying here for a long time. But nothing could make this happen without our customers. You know, our customers are my team members that help us run the day-to-day operations. They're everything.
Mayor Daniel Bist was at the ceremony as well and offered another perspective of D&D's as a pillar of the Evanston community.
This is just a beloved business. It's a business that's been an anchor in this neighborhood since 1973. It you really crossed that boundary incredibly seamlessly, catering to Northwestern and neighborhood customers who love this business, both sides of it alike. And that really adds a lot to the community. We're lucky to have you here.
When Schwartz started the Hall of Fame in 2006, his goal was to recognize the business owners and hot dog stands that had been open day in and day out for over 20 years and had dedicated their lives to serving a community.
It's just something that's very special, bringing these people, them, an opportunity to be heard and to be seen.
In fact, D&D's is the only Hall of Famer so far with a grocery store attached. And Schwartz says that's part of its appeal.
And I walk through the grocery part of it, and it's not a cookie cutter kind of grocery store that you would normally see with the regular chains. It is built and stocked for where they are, and it's got a commitment that I know the entire DeVicus family has made to this neighborhood and this area for a long time. And we'll continue. So thank you very much.
Over 50 years is a long time to run a business. And throughout the decades, the DeVicuses have no doubt seen many customers come and go and dedicated years of their lives to running this grocery store and restaurant. But as Thomas DeVicus, one of the original founders, says,
when you love them, you always make time.
For WNUR News, I'm Mika Ellison.
With queer culture entering the mainstream, it's becoming harder and harder to find and connect with the queer community. Does gaydar even exist anymore? Basil Free and Yumi Talud have the answer to this question and more.
Hey, Yumi.
Yes, Basil?
I have something really important to tell you. I'm gay.
Oh, wow. I would have never guessed.
Really?
Nah, man. I'm messing with you.
But how could you tell?
Well, just look at you. You have a big chunky patterned sweater on.
Well, sure, I guess. But what really queer trend hasn't been adopted by the masses these days?
Carabiners.
Crop tops.
Doc Martens.
Poppers.
With queer fashion trends entering mainstream spaces more and more every day, gaydar has gone completely out of whack.
For years, queer and straight people alike have used the term to describe their ability to recognize someone's sexual orientation due to a number of, often, stereotypical and generalized identifiers. These can come in many forms. The fashion one wears, how someone walks, how someone talks, etc., etc.
For queer people, gaydar can be a way for people to quickly identify who they may relate to and find community with. For straight people, it can be a way to label and other people based merely on surface-level judgments.
But, really, what does queerness, or even gayness, really look like anyway? As subcultures become more easily shared across social media, many inherently queer trends have lost their status as identifiers.
To hear more about this, we talked to Northwestern students to hear their thoughts on all things gaydar, seeing whether it even existed, and if it did, does it still?
We also wanted to know their thoughts on queerness entering the zeitgeist.
Firstly, here's Medill sophomore Luis Castaneda.
I think gaydar is, to me, kind of like a survival instinct.
Ooh.
Because as a queer person, you need to find another queer person to, and I'm not saying you need a relationship to survive,
yeah.
But I'm saying, like, I like to think of things in kind of like the scientific way.
To Castaneda, using gaydar can be an important way to identify other members of the queer community. In recent times, though, this has become a bit harder to do.
You run into an issue where that ability to be able to find your group becomes a little harder because you might think that someone is gay or queer because they're acting a certain way, because they're wearing a certain piece of art, because they enjoy certain music, right? And you're completely gooped when you find out that they're straight and you're like, wait, what?
And I saw this woman, I was like, oh my goodness, love of my life, and she's definitely gay. Like, yes, like, I know this, wrong. Kisses of a man, like, 5 minutes later, clearly her boyfriend. I was like, okay. And then my other, like, gay friend was like, wow, our culture is not their costume. And, like, obviously that's, like, a little heinous to say. But I was like, low-key, like...
That was Weinberg freshman Clara Wood. She's crashed and burned a few times when it comes to accidentally hitting on straight women. But in terms of big picture, she doesn't necessarily think that's a bad thing.
The amount of times I've been off at the school, I have no trust in my ability. And I feel like, I think, like, while it's annoying at times, I also think it's, like, kind of cool that, like, it's a lot more mixed together. And, like, it can also be, like, hopefully less, like, alienating for, like, queer people. I also think, like, even though I've lost my gaydar, it's also kind of like, well, now it's just like something that you can learn about someone rather than like something that separates you from the crowd. It's just like a part of their identity, just like everyone has other parts of their identity. It feels like a lot more stigma, a lot less stigmatized.
Though specific queer identifiers play a crucial role in how someone is labeled, Medill and Weinberg sophomore Sydney Johnson expressed concerns over whether these can become too constrictive.
I just don't want it to become like a thing where people like feel like they can only wear something if they are gay or if they aren't, or if maybe there's somebody who's questioning and they're trying to like experiment with their fashion and then they don't feel comfortable because people are telling them they can't wear it.
In some cases, these identifiers alienate queer people who don't fit into the stereotypical boxes.
My sophomore year, I was out at Bob's,
yes.
And one of my friends that will remain nameless, they came up to me and they went like, Daniel, I just don't think you're gay. And I went, well, what does that mean? They're like, I just don't believe it. I don't see it. Like, I don't, whatever. And I was like, okay, that's well, I am, like, I don't know what else to do that.
That was communication senior Daniel Calderon. He's been grappling with not presenting as gay right off the bat, especially as a man who's very proud to be queer.
It has come up a lot recently. Like, I went to Cancun for spring break, and I was talking to the, shout out to the John Hopkins soccer team, but they were talking to us, and I was with my friend Mateus and my friend Adam, and all three of us were talking to this one guy, and we were, like, joking around, being like, oh, like, guess our major, like, the three of us, like, we're all in the same major, come on, like, guess it, like, and they couldn't guess it, and we kept being like, three of us, we, like, what do we look like, come on, like, it's, like, stereotypical, like, it's okay to go there. And then he comes up to me and he, like, whispers in me, he's like, well, I know those two are gay, but I don't know about you. And I went, what? And then I went on, like, a rampage. I went up to every guy on the John Hopkins team. He was like, what can I do to be gayer?
It's easy to think that just because someone else is queer, it means you'll get along with them, whether it be for cultural reasons or simply because you have something in common. However, that's not always the case. Here's what communication senior Maggie McKenna had to say.
I met this Northwestern lesbian while I was studying abroad because she was in a class with my roommate. And I was like, yes, another lesbian. And then she was just the worst. And she still goes here. All my love to her. But I think that experience taught me that, like, not all queer people are awesome. And, like, just because there is another lesbian doesn't mean I want to be friends with them.
Northwestern's queer community certainly isn't perfect. And McKenna further expanded on her thoughts about the community.
I think that a lot of people really like to talk about being gay. And sometimes I'm like, why are you talking about this so much? Like, we should all talk about our identities, but sometimes I feel like people talk about it for social capital. Yeah, I think that there are some straight people who I've met at this university who I'm like, I think sometimes you're overstepping what is okay to do and say as a straight person because you're surrounded by a lot of queer people. There aren't many straight people in theater, but I think a lot of them do kind of also use queerness as social capital despite not being queer.
While talking about gaydar, our conversation then drifted to a broader talk on how we use the term queer, especially when identifying others. To Johnson, the term extends far beyond how most people define it.
I feel like queerness is something that you can explore outside of simply your sexual orientation, and should be something that you feel invited to explore in, like, every facet of your life, pushing those limits. I want people to know the history of queer culture and queer fashion, and I also want people to not think that it's something that's just for gay people.
Castaneda echoed a similar point, expressing that he's okay with gaydar's gray area status if it means more people are finding value in queerness.
So maybe it is a good thing that the gaydar is broken. You know, maybe people should be more liberated to be more queer, do queer actions. Because at the end of the day, it dissolves that kind of word in itself. If everyone's queer, no one's queer.
For WNUR News, I'm Basil Free.
And I'm Yumi Talud. Imagine being dropped into a random corner of the world and being asked to identify where you are. That's the goal of GeoGuessr, the online game that became a global phenomenon over the last several years. Gabe Shumway and Edward Simon Cruz explore what makes this global trotting journey so appealing.
What's this? The first official GeoGuessr world champion! He's done it from the qualifiers! He's done it!
That was the culmination of GeoGuessr's first ever World Cup event. But what is GeoGuessr? It's a video game you play using Google Maps, where you're placed in a random Google Street View location and must guess where you are. You may recognize it from your TikTok For You page, where someone happened to guess Brazil based on the red soil. It may be something that you played with your friends, determined to find out where you were. But what makes this game so appealing? What is causing this surge in worldwide popularity? Today we set out to find the answers behind GeoGuessr's meteoric rise.
I'm somebody who really likes geography, really likes maps. As somebody who kind of has likes to think that I at least have a decent view of what the world looks like and what different parts of the world look like, this is literally just examining how well you know the world.
That's Spencer McLaughlin, a Weinberg freshman here at Northwestern. He was initially drawn to the game through a YouTube video he watched nearly 10 years ago. Even though he played the game in a history class, it never stuck until the pandemic. During that time, he picked it up again and began playing with friends regularly. Ryan Almeida is a visiting assistant professor of environmental studies at Hamilton College. He chose to become the faculty advisor of Hamilton's GeoGuessr Club after falling in love with the game under similar circumstances.
I really picked it back up during the pandemic it probably was 2021-ish when I really got back into it. And I think a lot of people got into GeoGuessr during that time, in part due to wanderlust and sort of not being able to travel.
McLaughlin started a geography club at his New Jersey high school that quickly took to GeoGuessr as a form of entertainment. As the club gained popularity, the game became more competitive among its members.
So we had like a March Madness style bracket where everyone would compete. We also had, when we were playing casually, we had a leaderboard system where we had this really complicated Excel spreadsheet where you would put in your scores for an individual game, and it would give you like an ELO or a rating for the for your place in the club.
These competitions also take place at the college level, with schools competing virtually. Hamilton's GeoGuessr Club has both hosted and attended various collegiate competitions centered on the game.
You have two people per team. Each person places a guess where they think it is on the map. And then whichever guess is closest to the spot gets the most points. And the highest score from each team is subtracted. And so the difference represents sort of the score for that round. And people are given a set amount of health. And so if one team gets 4,000 points, the other team gets 3,000 points, the losing team will subtract 1,000 points from their score.
And last year, the world's greatest GeoGuessr players gathered in Stockholm, Sweden for the first ever GeoGuessr World Cup, which ended with Patrick Nordyke, known as Consus, being crowned as the eventual champion. This year's World Cup is already underway, with regional finals for the Americas taking place this weekend. Europe and Asia will have their own regional finals before the top 24 players globally square off in the two-day grand finale this September. But even if you're not a pro at identifying random spots around the world, you can still find something to enjoy in GeoGuessr.
There's quite a diversity in the way students and folks approach how they're going to figure out where they are. Some people clue straight into something like vegetation or the biome they exist in, right? Looking for whether or not the trees look tropical or whether it looks like an arid climate or whether it looks relatively temperate. Folks can be really interested in looking for things like architecture or potential language clues, right? And I think a lot of that just has to do with sort of what people naturally gravitate to when they're playing. And so I think one of the fun things about GeoGuessr is there's not really sort of one of those things that trumps the other, right? You really do need to sort of have this holistic view of the world.
For WNUR News, I'm Gabe Shumway.
And I'm Edward Simon Cruz.
As midterm season approaches, Northwestern sports are facing a lot of tests on the playing fields. Brendan Priceman has the NU Sports Report.
Hi, I'm Brendan Priceman. As the temperature continues to get colder, Northwestern athletics stays hot. Here's your NU Sports Report for this week. David Braun's squad won their first Big Ten game of the year in dominant fashion. The Wildcats crushed Maryland 37-10, scoring the first 17 points of the game. Despite getting outgained in yardage 355-283, Northwestern was able to cruise to a victory. Why? The defense forced 4 turnovers. Jack Lausch also had a very efficient day, completing 10 of his 18 passes for 203 yards. Northwestern also ran for 80 yards and 3 touchdowns as a team. In the receiving game, Bryce Kurtz caught just 3 passes but tallied 123 yards. On defense, Aiden Hubbard recovered a Maryland fumble in the end zone for a touchdown. Damon Walters also had a fumble recovery, as well as an interception. Looking ahead to this weekend, the Wildcats will welcome Wisconsin to Martin Stadium. The Badgers are 4-2 after 2 straight victories by a combined score of 94-13. While starting quarterback Tyler Van Dyke is out for the season, backup Braden Locke has done very well taking over for Van Dyke. With Wisconsin in a 6-way tie for 4th in the Big Ten, a victory on Saturday would be crucial if Northwestern wishes to make a bowl game. The Wildcats are currently tied for 12th at 1-2 in the Big Ten, but do have a 3-3 record overall. They'll try to move to 4-3 against the Badgers this Saturday, with kickoff slated for 11 a.m. Taking a look at fencing, Northwestern had an extremely successful week at the Remenyuk ROC at Ryan Fieldhouse. The Wildcats as a team earned 4 event titles and placed 18 players on the podium. Natalie Shearer led the way, going undefeated in her junior women's saber tournament play to earn the event title. Both Alex Chen and Amy Liu finished in the top five as well. Shearer continued to succeed in saber in the Division I women's saber event, upsetting four opponents to earn her second event title. Kira Erickson, Adele Bois, and Megumi Oishi also all finished in the top five. Karen Wang won her second straight Division I women's épée in the event after going unbeaten in both pool and tournament play. Athena Kwan, Amanda Perkowski, and Anna Damertoski were the Wildcats' other top five finishers in the events. And finally, Daphne Chan Nokze went unbeaten en route to taking the Division I women's foil title. Yukari Takimizawa finished second in that section and took second place in the junior division as well. Northwestern will be back in action again at the Northwestern Fall Duels on October 27th. And finally, Northwestern field hockey is off to a truly historic start. The Wildcats are off to a 13-0 beginning to this season, the program's best since 1985, when they went 14-0 to begin the season. Northwestern has earned every one of those victories, toppling five other top 10 teams already this year. Ashley Sessa has been transcendent in her first season in Evanston, scoring 13 goals to go along with 8 assists. Maddie Zimmer, who played in the 2024 Olympics with Sessa on Team USA, has also been scoring in bunches. She's got 6 goals and 4 assists for the second highest points mark on the team. Goalkeeper Annabelle Scubiche has been her typical brilliant self, allowing just 7 goals all season while posting 9 shutouts. The Wildcats have a pair of games later this week, taking on Stanford on Friday and UC Davis on Sunday, both at home. That wraps up your NU Sports Report for this week. For more information about upcoming games, as well as how you can watch the Wildcats live, visit www.nusports.com. I'm Brendan Kreisman, WNUR News.
Now for a brief look at the forecast. Can you say October? Tonight brings more cold to Evanston and the rest of Chicagoland as temperatures hit a low of 40 degrees overnight. Luckily, we can expect this cold spell to end as we go into the weekend, with temps in the low 50s tomorrow and moving into the 60s on Friday. Here's to hoping we can hold on to warm weather just a little longer. Now, let's take a look into the headlines in Evanston, Chicagoland, and across the nation and globe. Pulitzer Prize-winning author Louise Erdrich visited Northwestern last night to discuss her novel, The Night Watchman, which was selected as this year's One Book, One Northwestern. At the 20th annual One Book, One Northwestern keynote, Erdrich spoke about her inspirations for writing the novel and what she hopes Northwestern students and faculty took away from reading it. Schiller Park resident Robin Rierson has been sentenced to 18 months in prison due to his participation in the January 6th insurrection. Rierson pleaded guilty to assaulting, impeding, or resisting officers during the violence on Capitol Hill. He was immediately taken into custody. And finally, global pop star Liam Payne has died. According to reports, the former member of the British boy band One Direction fell from the third floor of a hotel in Buenos Aires. He was 31. That's all for WNUR News at 6 p.m. For more news updates and reports, follow us on X at WNUR News and Instagram at WNUR News 89.3. You can listen to these and other WNUR News stories on our website, WNURnews.org. That's WNURnews.org. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Our producer today is Sophia Kesa, and our reporters are Mika Ellison, Basil Free, Yumi Talud, Gabe Shumway, Edward Simon Cruz, and Brendan Priceman. I'm Jessica Watts. Catch our next newscast on Friday, October 18th. Now, back to scheduled programming.